Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik Palmgren. Good to have you with us. RedIce.tv is the website where you can listen to more radio shows, watch our videos, and read our articles. RedIceMembers.com is our members' website for fans, subscribers, and supporters, where you can watch our live TV show, Weekend Warrior. We also, of course, have a radio archives packed to the brim there for you, 10 years of material. Well, today on the show, we're talking with Daniel Hammarberg, one of our Swedish friends, who returns to the show to discuss his recent censored Facebook page group that tracks and monitors convicted pedophiles as a way to warn and alert parents and those who should know who they don't want their kids to be around. Understandably, the page is slated to be locked and blocked. No one can currently post to it. It's just too politically incorrect these days to try to warn your fellow neighbors about pedophiles that might be after your children. Well, beyond this, we're also going to discuss the situation in Sweden, talk about the new land, the new country, that ad that came out, and we're also going to get a general update on the fall of our nation, a nation in distress. Well, stay tuned as we begin to warm up Daniel's English. Welcome back, Daniel. Thank you so much for coming on the show again. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Oh, thanks.
It was a few years ago since we had you on the show last time. I think it was 3 years ago, amazingly. It doesn't feel like it, but just for newcomers, Daniel, maybe you can just say a couple of words about yourself in terms of what the audience should know if they're new to your work.
Well, I've mostly presented my book, The Madhouse, about Swedish society to an international audience, and that was the topic of my appearance on your show last time, and there I brought up stuff that usually upset about Swedish society. Now I've decided to talk about some other more recent stuff and more news-related. Yeah, so maybe I should explain my perspective. I'm a social conservative and a nationalist and a right-winger. I'm definitely a part of the alt-right that's so much in the news lately.
Thank God they're in the news, huh? It's growing like crazy. We can actually talk about that a little bit later in terms of how kind of Sweden fits into that parameter, if you will. But one of the things that we wanted to focus on in the beginning is basically what happened to your Facebook group. You have a NSP, which stands for Network to Stop Pedophiles or Pedophilia. There's been just a ton of censorship lately in terms of Facebook and Google, YouTube, Twitter. It's really a crackdown that's beginning to occur. Give us a story of what happened with your Facebook group and how this has resolved itself.
Well, we've been a bit in a conflict with authorities. In America, you have all those sex offender registries that publicize the identities of predators. But in Sweden, their identities are protected and they get ridiculous sentences by the justice system. So in order to protect the public, we publicize their identity through our Facebook group and our blog, but the authorities really don't like that, and Facebook has also joined in and repeatedly shut down our accounts, giving us repeated 30-day suspensions from Facebook because it publicized the identity of convicted child molesters the way authorities do in the US. So it's absolutely absurd. This group in Swedish Network, it's Stoppa Pedofilerna, the network to stop pedophiles, it has about 62,000 Swedish followers, which is quite a lot for that country. And yeah, 2 weeks ago, I learned that Facebook intended to completely shut us down for good because we had defied their repeated suspensions of us. So that truly upset me.
That was about a specific post, was it not?
Yeah, it was one in a long line of publications of convicted child molesters. Yeah, I usually, whenever there's a convicted pedophile, I mean, in Swedish media, they don't talk about the identities or anything. They only say that someone has been convicted for the crime. But in our group, we bring up the identities of these people. So we ask for court records and such. And yeah, what usually happens when we publicize the identities is that we get suspended from Facebook for 30 days. It's absolutely sick.
It's amazing, though, because, you know, Swedish society is basically like a stalker's paradise. There's nothing that you can't find out about people in terms of their records and where they live. In most cases, there's only, you know, you have to take extra measures, basically, if you want to try to kind of dodge some of these issues. In this case, they're actually protecting criminals. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, many people ask themselves if maybe these very sex offenders have good representation within the authorities because they get such protection.
You're doing the job, really, that the authorities should be doing. That's basically, because basically, ultimately, this is about protecting children so we can know who's who are convicted, you know, offenders, so that this doesn't happen again. But for some damn reason, the state doesn't get involved in this at all, and they seem to protect them.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually illegal under Swedish law to publicize them the way we do, but on the internet, individual nation states really don't have much of a say, so we can usually get around that. But up until recently, Facebook didn't really involve themselves much either, but since like a half a year back, they've also started banning us. I mean, before that, we regularly posted all the identities without problem, but lately, the censorship has really escalated, so they've started shutting us down.
Yeah, it has. It's absolutely crazy. So, if I understand the situation correct as well, this was actually a migrant into Sweden that you published the identity of a while back, and I think also partially for this reason, the page was hit with being blocked for a while. Is that correct?
It's hard to say. I mean, I was only informed that it was against their community rules making the post. I mean, they don't go into specifics about what they have done, only that they have violated community rules. But yeah, the particular one that I got 30 days for the last time, and the one that led up to us being told that the group would be entirely shut down, that was an immigrant, yeah.
Tell us about RFSL. This is another group that's been active in Sweden for a long, long time. I think they popped up somewhere in the 70s, and they've been instrumental in kind of creating this environment that we have in Sweden today.
Yeah, that's the main gay lobby in Sweden. In Swedish, it's called Riksförbundet för sexuellt likaberättigande. But I've got a funny pun for it. Riksförbundet för sodomitiskt leverne. The National Association for Sodomite Living instead, because that fits their agenda so much better.
It does.
Anyway,
yeah.
They've really been involved in molesting children too. I mean, earlier, back in the 70s and 80s, they even have had a thing called Pedophila Arbetsgruppen, the pedophile working group that tried to completely decriminalize all sexual contact between adults and children. And since then, they also had many people within leading position inside the organization also convicted of sex crimes against children. So it's really pedophile's nest, this organization.
Disgusting. I remember then when these showed up in school, I forget what age group this was, but I remember that there was a basically active promotion of homosexuality, the gay lifestyle. They were handing out condoms. I think we must have been 14, 15, maybe even younger.
Yeah, they had something called, sorry for the bad language, but a queer fuck shop that they started back in 2013, I believe it was. The lowest age was 13, and they started promoting all sides of all sorts of sexual deviancy among children. I got this page up, let's see. These are the questions they ask on the webpage. How does the body function sexually? How can sex become better for me and the people I have sex with? Welcome to a workshop about sex beyond the heteronorm that can answer your questions about sex and teach you something didn't even know that you didn't know. And that's saying that ages 13 and up. And it's even absurd that that organization, RFSL, it's embraced by virtually all non-government organizations. It's a really powerful lobby. So
yes, one of the old, I read up on these guys a while back, and I remember that too, that there was like incredibly powerful, strangely enough. They had their tentacles in virtually every political party. They had ins with a lot of other groups that are influential in Swedish politics. I was very surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, they've got representation in virtually all the parliamentary parties, and also organizations like the military and the police and such march in their parades. They're usually required, pretty much. It's not a formal requirement, but it's pretty obvious that one is expected to take part in these gay pride marches if one wants to have a part in Swedish state administration.
Yeah, they've truly perverted the environment and climate in Swedish politics, these kinds of groups. What else do you think that people should know about this group who are maybe not from Sweden, that haven't had any experience, if you will, with these people and what they do?
There are usually lots and lots of parliamentary bills that demand various privileges for homosexuals, like special elder nursing homes, and I also remembered something else. They also have these training drills that pretty much all government, both on a state level and local, have to attend. There's something called LGBT competence or LGBT proficiency. I mean, this organization, RFSL, demands money for the training that the government workers are expected to go through, and they're taught about how to approach homosexuals and such. So,
really? I had no idea. So this is basically for government employees, right? They have to they have to be taught how to deal with homosexuals with cotton gloves in a specific way?
Yeah, it's really fun reading through all the stuff that's been written. I mean, it covers even things like two male homosexuals living together on welfare. How would the social workers deal with them and not offend them by, like, saying that maybe you should be married to a woman or whatever?
So hetero norms have to kind of sneak their way into the Swedish welfare system, right?
Yeah, they're a really privileged class. I mean, everyone who's had to deal with a public authority or welfare authority or whatever knows that they regularly mistreat people that approach them, but the homosexual community obviously wants to make sure that no homosexual is mistreated. They're a special class of more privileged people who don't get treated like other people.
Where in the Sweden today is there kind of homophobia, or somehow the people are like looking down on these people or whatever, that they need to be a protected class? It's quite the reverse. I mean, this is a lifestyle that is being celebrated. I mean, it's mostly the same around the Western world these days, to be honest. But this kind of victim mentality that seems to be kind of permeate in the homosexual world, it's not really there anymore, to be honest.
No, I mean, there's virtually no violence or anything against homosexuals. So with the recent immigration of Muslims, it has ignited a little, but it doesn't seem to be really intense, and it doesn't seem like the Muslims who hate homosexuals really reach the Swedish homosexuals. They're really separated, so, yeah, the homosexuals are absolutely not a vulnerable group in today's Sweden. They're really more like royalty.
So what's going to happen with the Facebook group now then? As you said, it's a pretty big page. People can reach it by going to facebook.com/netverket, which means network. Is it going to be permanently shut down? When is this going to occur?
They didn't inform me that much. Only left me this note that, let's see, the first message was, your page isn't being published any longer for repeatedly posted things that don't comply with the Facebook terms. Please review the Facebook community standard to learn more about our policies.
But the page itself is still up.
The page is indeed up as we speak, but they informed me that it has been unpublished and it's meant to be for good. So
maybe it's like shadow banning or something. Remember, Twitter is doing that kind of stuff. It means that if people actually search or, you know, try to find your information, it basically won't show up either as hits on the post that you make or even on the main page itself. They do stuff like that these days.
Yeah, and all administrators of the page have been suspended, so we can't post anything on it or do anything. So it's really like an idle group now that can't be used.
So what's the backup plan here? Because this is obviously a good thing that you offer concerned mothers and fathers in Sweden who want to make sure that their child isn't molested by a pedophile. Are you guys going to set up a new group? Any plans?
Well, we've kind of been very spoiled by the momentum we've been able to get on Facebook. And like, we do have a blog that we publish stuff on, but we don't really have that much social media experience, so the activity has all come on Facebook. I don't know if it's really because of us being good at it, but it is there that the all the activity has occurred, so it really strikes hard against us that they book us there. But yeah, we do have a blog, but we won't get nearly as much traffic coming there, unfortunately.
That's too bad. I mean, as you said, this has kind of spread itself, unfortunately, in the last few months. Twitter has started to ban people. Facebook is working together with the European Union these days. I think this was an initiative that first popped up between, you know, there was a meeting between Merkel and Zuckerberg, who stole Facebook and set that up, stole the technology for it and set that up. What do you think is at the root of this? Why is it being reshaped in the way that it is right now?
Yeah, it's fairly obvious that freedom of speech is something that the powers that be today don't want us to have. And there's a certain ethnic group that always has sought to deny us freedom of speech. And there's really a common factor between all these groups that shut down freedom of speech today. Groups like Facebook, the Anti-Defamation League, Swedish Expo, and similar. The people you usually call the tribe.
It's a tribe of people. You know, there was a story out of The Guardian, the British paper, that was actually early last year, 2015, all about how European Jewish leaders were calling for a European-wide legislation to outlaw, quote, anti-Semitism, unquote. And of course, we can always get into the debate of how do you define this? What is it? What constitutes as you know, unlawful hate versus, let's say, criticism or simply pointing things out. But I know that, you know, when the story was released, they were really pushing and lobbying for kind of a pan-European legislation. And it seems that that push might be at the root of what caused the European Union to kind of go in this direction. I don't know what you think.
Yeah. I mean, they've pushed for such initiatives for a very long time. In Sweden, the law, Hets mot folkgrupp, agitation against ethnic group, it originated as a consequence of push from Jewish groups. So that's the reason we have hate speech laws in Sweden. And it's the same for pretty much all European countries. And the last 5 years or so, they pushed initiatives at an EU level to pretty much annihilate freedom of speech across the whole European continent. And yeah, these are the kinds of initiatives. And that's why I believe we see Facebook shut down so much stuff today. I mean, virtually everyone within the alt-right has gotten suspended once or twice. So,
you know, Daniel, what's going to start happening is that when Facebook begins to take these initiatives and drive people off their platforms, I think, you know, more and more people are going to turn the other way and walk somewhere else. You know, the YouTube recently, I saw it just today, a story. YouTube's Heroes program makes censorship into a role-playing game, right? So what they're doing is that they're actually kind of outsourcing the issue of reporting, you know, content which is deemed offensive or inappropriate or stuff like that, and they're giving points to people who are reporting it. Eventually, the more points you garner, the higher up kind of on the levels you get, and you can actually mass ban videos and stuff like that if you get, you know, points enough. I think this is going to lead to their downfall, and I think more and more people are going to be driven off their platforms when they do this.
Yeah, they really seem to like to condition people into becoming useful idiots. I also find that point system interesting, because in China, for a year or two ago, they implemented something similar on their, I forgot which exact one, but they had a point system for people who were compliant with state directives, so...
Yeah, this is like a Scientology-esque kind of level system, which is like, level 1, become a hero, 0 to 9 points, right? You can join the community and access to Heroes Dashboard. Level 2, continue your training, 10 to 99 points. Now you can, like, begin to report people. Level 3, get access to super tools, 100 to 399 points, and on it goes all the way up to level 5. I mean, it's like ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's sad. I mean, first, young people are brainwashed into thinking that there's actually something dangerous with dissenting views, and then they're conditioned into becoming these useful idiots and reporting stuff that the powers that be want shut down. I mean, it doesn't benefit the people doing it at all. They're only useful idiots.
Conformity is cool. I report people when I see offensive content. It's like ridiculous. Yeah, it's true that. And I think that nowhere is that more true than in, unfortunately, I have to say, in Sweden. The conformity, as you know, Daniel, is immensely strong, you know, in Sweden. And it's something that, you know, I wish we could break away from. With the ascent of the alt-right, and primarily in America, but this is, of course, an identitarian movement that's on the rise in Europe overall, how are things on the ground as far as you see it? Is there more popularity to these kinds of topics? Are people being attracted to some of these arguments after years of unrelenting mass migration into Sweden?
Well, I do think they're a bit split, because on the one hand, people are obviously more upset than ever, so they're more loud than ever on social media, but there's still this stigma about actually activating yourself and organizing and getting organized and joining organizations that do stuff. I mean, the neo-Nazi word is so quickly brought up when you actually do something about it. So people shout a lot, but they don't do as much. But hopefully it will come to a point where people actually start taking action and not just venting.
Well, they have to, otherwise their country is going to be lost and we're going to be flooded. We can talk, you know, more about that later. But I know one of the things that you were following too, and we were as well, is obviously the Trump campaign and what's happening with that. And one such example is pretty funny with the gas chamber joke that Donald Trump Jr. did. Do you see that one?
Yeah, that was a week ago, and he is really getting a following. I mean, before this election, we didn't really know who Donald Trump Jr. was, but this election, he's really used language that has created an interest in his person, and also very much attacks from the establishment. And yeah, this last week, he used the reference gas chamber. Donald Trump Jr. made a reference to warming up the gas chamber while complaining about the dream that his father is. Yeah, that's funny. I mean, Jews feel that they have a monopoly on any references to gas chambers. I mean,
yep.
In the U.S. criminal justice system, I believe the U.S. still uses gas chambers to execute people in some states. So it's not exclusive to Jews and their idea, world of ideas. But yeah, they really started shouting about anti-Semitism because Trump Jr. used that word. And if you can keep a distance to the subject, it's pretty funny reading the CNN article I got up. Gas chambers were used by Nazis in the Holocaust, the genocide of 6 million Jews and millions of others during World War II. Trump's campaign denied that Trump Jr. was referring to the Holocaust. I mean, why on earth do you bring in such stuff? I mean,
you gotta constantly remind people, right? I mean, it's. I think the main programming, I've said this many times, but I think the main kind of programming about the Holocaust, you know, again, whatever page you're on about it or whatever, but let's just recognize this aspect that we're talking about a historical event, and we're talking about that there's a group of people that are looking into this, you know, for themselves, instead of just taking the de facto stance of the history books as they come to us. And many of those people, they end up in jail, they end up in prison, ostracized, their careers ruined, and all these kinds of things happen with them, right? So what they're doing, one of the ways that they're keeping people kind of entranced with this version, one version that they want to give to us, is not with big historical tomes or with you know, mass academic works that prove this to us or whatever. It's in these kinds of scenarios, in these bypassing kind of casual remarks. I was, for example, watching a random like TV movie on YouTube the other day. Two times in the movie there was references to the Nazis and the Holocaust, and it was like on a completely different topic because it was not about that. And so what I'm getting at is that with the CNN article and all these other articles, they keep pushing it out and mentioning it in passing, like while you're focusing on the presidential campaign of Donald Trump, let's bring in the Holocaust in it in some way to remind people what the real story is, right? That's how they do it.
Yeah, it's used like a whip. I mean, they constantly condition people into fearing as opposed to the Holocaust. I mean, even in this last year's X-Men movie, I believe in all the X-Men movies they've had references. I believe the Magneto character was a Jew who lived in the concentration camps in the, and in virtually every movie, they remind us about that story and how we avenged all the Germans in that camp, and it's portrayed like it was justified in killing everyone. And yeah, so it has a really dark side to it. I mean, not only are you talking about the supposed threats to your own lives, but you're also justifying your own aggression into anyone you think could commit something like that. So there's a bit of psychopathy in promoting the Holocaust, I believe, because it doesn't have only a defensive purpose.
No, that's true. It's a good point. You know, one other thing that happened that was kind of interesting too, because people have always speculated, what do the Trumps, what do they know, how much are they really kind of in line with the alt-right and stuff like that? I'm sure you saw Hillary Clinton's speech on actually connecting Donald Trump and some of these casual figures that are maybe on the peripheries of the alt-right. She brought in people like Alex Jones into it, which, you know, he isn't really alt-right, of course. But nonetheless, one of the things that came out of that environment is that it was also Donald Trump Jr. actually retweeted someone like Kevin McDonald. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was fascinating. I mean, he's definitely a part of the alt-right, this Professor Kevin McDonald. He's most famous for this work, The Culture of Critique, and I believe you had him as guest a couple of times too.
Sure. Yep, that's right.
So yeah, I suppose if one really wants to look up his work, one can check this interview. But
I can say this too, though: if someone wants to understand, you know, why someone, for example, criticizes Jewish organizations, Jewish interests, they should take a look at Kevin McDonald's work, because he, on a scholarly level, detail and tracks these movements in a way that no one else has. I mean, he's done the academic work on why this is a legitimate topic to look into.
Yeah, I think he's really exposed the Jewish power structure and how they made their way through the academic institutions, the Frankfurt schools and such. I mean, many in conspiracy media and such talk about the Frankfurt school, but one doesn't. They usually don't pretend to know anything about what that movement really was, but McDonald really has exposed that it was a Jewish movement to attempt to reform Western societies more into Jewish liking,
yeah,
more fitting their needs.
So what was the, I don't know if you recall the tweet in question that Junior kind of retweeted?
It was completely unrelated. Let's see, here I got it. And this was what McDonald wrote. Wald had a detailed account of how Hillary did favor for UBS. UBS then gave millions to Clinton Fund and gave Bill $1.6 million. So it's not related to Jews at all, but they gave Donald Trump Jr. so much flack for bringing to the spotlight this man.
You know what? I find that interesting, because it was a reply to something Megyn Kelly said on Fox, and it's interesting too, because same thing happened with Donald Trump when he retweeted one of the white genocide accounts, and it was like the whole media exploded. It was even the same thing when he retweeted Hillary in the foreground with a red six-pointed star behind her and then money in the background, and they had like analysts from the ADL, experts that were looking into the symbology of what the image really meant, right? I remember CNN spent days on this, of like trying to deconstruct if this was an anti-Semitic gesture just because it was a backdrop of money and a six-pointed star. It's amazing that they think that, you know, just because Trump retweets someone, he should know the entire history of the account, of what this person really thinks, everything that they have ever tweeted. I mean, these are unsubstantiated, like, demands that they're putting on these people.
Yeah, and there's an old American saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names can never hurt me. I mean, really, they shouldn't care so much about symbolism and whatever, because, I mean, really, that symbolism, according to Jewish media, is supposed to be about wanting to exterminate Jews or whatever. I mean, if they actually go ahead and link Trump to this, do they actually insinuate that he wants to do that? Because, really, one can't take that seriously. Symbolism very seriously. I mean, it's really lighthearted, and I don't think he really pays much attention to it, but
right,
the Jews really seize upon it and make it look like he wants to commit a Holocaust or whatever.
Yeah, they're trying to shame them for basically associate. He's killed by association. We know what that is all about.
I found the comment on the dailycaller.com article quite interesting, because usually it's been quite stigmatized talking about Jewish power. I mean, one has been insinuated to be a Nazi right away and such. But if you look at the comments that everyday Americans have posted there, they're quite aware of Jewish power, and in spite of being often libertarian and not at all fascist, they still talk about Jewish power, and they really understand who are behind censorship and the New World Order and such. So
interesting. So that's Jonah Benet, or Bennett, I guess it is, that is the author of that piece.
Yeah.
So they kind of took a somewhat favorable position, I guess, on Kevin MacDonald's work, right?
Yeah, definitely. The commenters are very warm about his work and bring up various issues. And it feels like the Nazi link is disappearing. I mean, it's apparent that many people feel that they can talk about Jewish power without understanding themselves as Nazis. I mean, one doesn't want to exterminate Jews just because one talks about Jewish power.
No, exactly. This aspect that there's a tremendous power and finance behind many of the interest groups that are actually operating solely on a Jewish level. I mean, this is a reality, particularly in America, but also within the European Union. I mean, we listed some of the organizations in one of the TV episodes that we did, and I couldn't believe how many European, specifically European Jewish organizations there are that are founded specifically to forward and to lift forward the interests of Jewish people in Europe, for example. And I mean, and if they have political influence, if they have financial influence, you must be able to be in a position where you can criticize this without being called names. I mean, that's beyond childish. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's quite funny or very striking that they don't appear to trust their surrounding populations. I mean, in virtually all modern countries, we're expected to identify with the state and let it represent us, and not seek out an identity politics. I mean, it's tolerated for certain races in America, but in Europe, identity politics plays a very small role. But Jews, on the other hand, they really embrace identity politics and push their own interests.
Yeah, some would say that they're the founders of identity politics. I don't think there's anything negative with it, to be honest. I think it's perfectly fine for them to have their identity. I'm not, you know, a kind of a conservative that seems to think that, well, just drop your identity and everything will be fine because we're all the same, so we can all get along. I don't believe in that. I think the only difference, of course, is that it's a double standard. It's a hypocrisy, because while they're advocating for their identity, which, again, I'm perfectly fine with that, but they turn around and they advocate for the disillusion of our identity, right? And we don't have any rights to push our interests or to favor our own or to basically say that, you know, I belong to this group and I stand with them, etc. It's kind of forbidden for Europeans to do that, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, the white student unions that started appearing on American universities this year, that's created such an absurd reaction from Jewish media. I mean, they should really apply the same reaction when Jews organize Jewish interest groups, but it's very obvious that we are not allowed to have any, but they do.
I think it was ADL that released, you know, speaking about Jewish power and influence, they actually released kind of a graphic that was meant to criticize people who criticize the 1%. They try to claim, you know, when the Occupy movement was on the rise, people were starting to go after the so-called 1%. It turned out, I think it might even be more, but I think according to statistics that the ADL pulled out, over 40% of those 1% were Jewish. So it turned out that, you know, they try to claim, ADL try to claim, if you criticize the 1%, you're really anti-Semitic because you're criticizing Jews. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I mean, they expose themselves as being the ones that power them.
Well, it's funny because how can it be that if they don't have any power and influence, how can they shut down people for criticizing them, right? That's the very definition of having power.
Yeah. Voltaire had a really nice quote about it, the French philosopher. If you wonder who really rules you, ask who your you can't criticize.
That's right. We've had other interest groups biting into the business of Swedish politics here very recently. We actually had a book fair in Gothenburg. Very interesting things that came out of this. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, the book fair is a meeting place for Swedish publishers, and it's really only traditionally been visited by them, and they want to sell their books there. But this year, this somewhat alternative alternative newspaper, Nya Tider, New Times, they decided that they were going to have a stand at this book fair and present their own media. And there was a bit hostility from the organizers at first. And then also the Simon Wiesenthal Center joined in and demanded that the prime minister himself banned Nya Tider from the book fair. And yeah, so it's absolutely absurd. I mean, this organization, this Jewish organization, they think they have the right to boss around our own government. But
it's amazing. You know, the chutzpah, as they would say. They just elbow their way forward. And what's funny, too, we should mention is that the book fair, which takes place annually in Gothenburg, the specifics, the topic, the theme for this year, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but was freedom of speech, right?
Yeah, that's really fun.
You can't make it up. You know, you can't make it up.
Yeah. Fortunately, when push came to show, the Nya Tider was actually able to attend because this initiative to ban them was so widely criticized. I mean, even in established media, people came out against the ban, so they really had to drop it. So, yeah.
I think they have to do it to show good face, as they say. You know, they have to like, all right, well, we can't pose ourselves as too much of kind of, well, I wouldn't use this word, but they would, fascists or authoritarians or something like that. But I think the book fair actually starts today, if I'm not mistaken, the time of when this recording takes place, 22nd of September. It goes until the 25th, I believe.
Yeah, I forgot the exact date. When I learned that they were intending at after all, then it stopped being news. Like, I mean, this book fair is usually not very much interest to me. I mean, it would be on if they let me promote my own stuff, but I mean, if you have to face such resistance if you want to promote something alternative, then you really don't become very interested. So it's become very apparent that they don't really have a high roof for alternative views.
Yeah, it's a narrow opinion corridor for sure. I think they've allowed other, maybe there was New Times, New Updater themselves, the paper, that brought up that there was like open Stalinists at this book fair. They were like, they had images of Stalin in their booth and stuff like that, a mass murder that has been like partially responsible for the murder of millions of white Russian people. So that's fine, right?
And that's definitely a double standard. I mean, now when you think about such matters, it becomes obvious that it's not a matter of genocide, who killed or didn't kill. It's a matter of whether you oppose Jewish power. And Nya Tider and New Times, they're really not a very outspoken publication. I mean, one thing, though, is that they have written a little bit critical stuff about Jewish power, so that's caused them to be flagged as dissidents. Some people that shouldn't be tolerated. So it's obvious that you can be a killer or supporter of murderous regimes, but you can't be critical of Jewish power.
Yeah, that's where it lies. You know, look at someone like Soros, for example. I think a new item that came out here just the other day is he's going to put in around $500 million into the migrants and refugees, specifically in Europe, but I think maybe in other parts of the world too, to help them to start businesses, to help them to get up on their feet economically and stuff like this. I believe, sincerely, I think that some of this money is going to go basically directly into the fifth column that we have now in Europe, which is Islamic State. I think a lot of this money is going to be funneled into terrorism and other things. What do you think when you hear this?
Yeah, I mean, when immigrants get their hands on money, it usually ends up in terrorist pockets, and I mean, immigrants are notorious for sending money back home, so yeah, it definitely will increase terrorism as a side effect.
Absolutely amazing. You know, one of the things I want to do, Daniel, after the break is to actually get into and play the clip from the new country or the nya landet. This is new video that came out by an organization called IM, Individual, I guess, People Help. IM stands for Individuell Människohjälp in Swedish, which means helping people, individual help of people, which is a really interesting clip where we can get into kind of the details of that after the break. But before we do that, please give us some of the details of you know, of the book that you've written about Swedish society. Give us your website, if there's anything else you have upcoming that you'd like to let our audience know about before we take a break here.
Okay, my book that I wrote back in 2011 is called The Madhouse, A Critical Study of Swedish Society. It's up on Amazon and similar book sites. I don't have a publisher behind me, so it's self-published through Print on Demand, but it's always available on Amazon as such. And I do have a bit of clips or excerpts from it available on my website, danielhammerberg.com. You can probably look up the link because, I mean, it's unlikely that you spell it. But, yeah, look up The Madhouse and Daniel, perhaps, if you want to find it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll add a link to that for sure. It's pretty good stuff. The book, we talked about that last time, folks. You can check out that interview if you want to, you know, hear more about the book. As you guys know, we've been very critical of everything that's been happening in Sweden and the transformation of our country. And Daniel really managed to kind of nail some of those points and describe the situation in Sweden for those who don't know. Okay, so another thing I wanted to ask you about quickly as well was, if you had any plans, I guess, for to continue, as I said before, the monitor of the convicted pedophiles in Sweden. Any plans or thoughts on what to do next regarding that?
Well, I've grown so accustomed to, like, the activity you can get on Facebook. I mean, because some of our publications there have gotten hundreds of thousands of people to read them, but we wouldn't get that much on our blog, so I'm a little bit concerned that it might be a little bit wasted effort the way it is now, but we really need a better social media strategy to reach out if we don't have access to Facebook any longer. So unfortunately, today, I don't have a plan for really how to continue the work. So, yeah, it's a bit
I know the guys at Motgift were starting OP, Our Own Place Is Here. I haven't been checking it out too much yet, but I'm definitely going to get on there. I'm definitely going to help to spread the word about that. I should have them back there. There is a couple of initiatives that I've seen plop up here and there in terms of alternatives to it. Still, though, after at the end of the day, the difficulty with it is then you'll get a and this is perfectly okay. I'm not criticizing people who take the initiative to do something about this. We need our own social network, but partially the reason why somewhere like Twitter or Facebook is good is because you have hundreds of millions of people on these social networks, and it's a way for you to kind of expand and, you know, get in touch with people who otherwise probably would never come to your site, right? So it's that interaction and ability to debate and argue and prove things to people one way or another. That's what's good about it. So if everyone would just run to their own corner, to their own, I guess, safe space or whatever, then you wouldn't get that level of interaction, and people would just be further isolated to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook has really become the meeting ground. So, I mean, if you go back like 3 years, we didn't have as much of a following there as we do now. So, as it has increased, I've gotten a bit, it's like you expect distraction, but without Facebook, we wouldn't get as much. So, it's very obvious that they want to be able to shut out people they don't like. So, that's what happening now, and it's very sad that they can do that.
Yeah, it's a travesty. It's signs of the times. It's the direction where we're heading. And just wait until, you know, the alt-right really takes off, when people who are dissidents and true counterculture begins to, you know, sway even more influence over the political system and the cultural framework of our societies. I think they're going to clamp down like no one else, to be honest. I mean, again, they always accuse, you know, fascists of being, you know, book burners and silencing people and stuff like that. I think that these lefties are the worst. Nothing, you know, they're going to top everything that they accuse their enemies of doing. That's what I think, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they've already worked in that the enemy, the alt-right, is supposedly guilty of everything you could possibly be, so anything they do against them. Come to think of it, there's a phrase the left, in the extra-parliamentary left here in Sweden use, anti-fascism is always self-defense. That's the
right.
slogan they use.
Yep.
So that's how they justify all forms of violence against dissidents.
Exactly, because they think, you know, fascists, they round up and gas 6 million Jews, they build concentration camps, they imprison everyone, they murder people, they torture them. That's really what they think, you know, because they've given this fairy tale version of history. And so they see that as a self-defense measure. Well, guess what? That's what we feel about communism and international socialism. Look at how many, 50, 60 million people maybe as much died in Soviet Russia, you know? And you never hear that argument as a counterweight to it. It's always just Nazis, 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 fascists, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's only about one particular interest that matters.
All right, Daniel, stay with us. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to pick up here in a little bit. The website, by the way, danielhammarberg.com. We'll have that linked up. Check out the book. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is ad-free radio. We spare you from commercial breaks and spare you from websites with ads and blinking banners. So what we do is we have a member section. This show is listener-supported. This is how we can grow and continue to do what we do. And so doing, bring on more people so that we can produce more and cover more. This is how it works. So we'll proceed with the second hour after the break together with Daniel. Go to redicemembers.com and sign up for a membership if you haven't already. That's the way to tune in to the continuation. You get radio shows, live shows, videos, and much more. We have 10 years of alternative media coverage on a ton of topics there for you. Upcoming, we have Kevin MacDonald, Bashir Rabbani, Pedro Varela, and we're still talking with John Lash. Our interview has been postponed a bit, but it is upcoming. We'll be right back after the break. Talk to you in the member section. Thank you so much for listening.